Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
The chef in the chapeau. Welcome, sir, to the Hot Stove Society.
And I'm so happy to be here like we do every Friday.
Yeah. You know, we're going to start moving our taping to Wednesdays. And I'm thinking about going back to our camera version of this. Not pay-per-view, but maybe just going back on YouTube.
Why not?
We're going to explore that a little bit.
Pay-to-view, that would be good.
I'm Tom Douglas. I'm owner of several Seattle restaurants, not nearly as many as I used to own, but I'm based mostly out of Ballard right now, a Serious Takeout at 52nd and 14th Avenue Northwest. That's where we do our Serious Pie Takeout there. We do our Serious dinner boxes, you know, the one coming up. I'm super excited about it because I made some of the puns for it. Not buns, puns.
Hamilton?
Is the No. It's like the Hamilton one, though, but we did it for the West Wing. West Wing is having
a
reunion show in October. So we're going to do a West Wing reunion dinner box for the month of October. So while you're sitting there watching West Wing, you can have some C.J. Craig's and bacon.
Mm.
Josiah Bartlett tart, pear tart.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right in the season.
So there's all sorts of fun stuff. So looking forward to that. But we do many, many pop-ups. Yesterday we were chili dogs. I mean, we Thursday is chili dog day now. They were so popular that we do them every Thursday.
Cool.
On the dock, on the grill. Yum. We have a big show for you today. We've got so many things. Meatball Fantasy. Terry, I'm going to tell you about a fantasy I had about a restaurant.
Okay.
Called Meatball Fantasy. And so we're going to talk about that.
Can't wait to hear.
As time moves on. Have you ever had a bread and butter pickle sandwich?
Not yet, but I've read all about it, and it sounds really appetizing.
I know Madeline sent us the article from Savour Magazine, and Madeline's our producer. And so I read that, too, and I've got some opinions about this. I know you're shocked that I have an opinion. We have a... what's the date on the pop-up for the benefit for the Ballard Food Bank? Is that the 3rd and 4th? Yeah, the 3rd and 4th of October, we're doing a dock breakfast pop-up. Myself and Amy Richardson, one of our other producers here, and we're going to do pancakes and eggs on the dock. And you bring a can of food, and you get a mochi donut. We'll give you one of our fabulous mochi donuts if you bring a can of food. It has to be in date dough. Sometimes people go through their cupboards and they think, oh, I'm just going to give this to the food bank. It's been here for 15 years. But, you know, what happens if you do that is that the food bank can't give it away.
Right.
So they have to pay to throw it away. And so you're really at a disservice to the food bank to give them out-of-date or crushed cans, things that, you know, a typical grocery store couldn't sell because there's liabilities involved. And so when you do bring the food, just try to make sure that it's in-date food.
Mm-hmm.
And we have freezers, we have refrigerators, we have canned good shells, we have all sorts of things. So when you bring a canned good on the 3rd and 4th of October, you get a free mochi donut. When you buy our pancake breakfast or our Hunter's breakfast, we have two versions. $2 from each breakfast goes towards the Ballard Food Bank.
Oh, wow, that's a lot.
Because we know, you and I both know, being on the board of Food Lifeline, that cash is king sometimes, right? Because they can turn a dollar into 16 pounds of food.
Yeah. They can do a much better job with your dollar than we can just bringing them food. So, yes, you're encouraged to give your dollar there.
Today, Daisley Gordon's going to be here. He's the chef and owner of Cafe Campagna in the Seattle's Pike Place Market. Looking forward to chatting with him. I haven't seen him in a while, and certainly not since COVID started, so looking forward to that. And we're going to finish up the show with our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. And hopefully Daisley's going to stay for that. I'm looking forward to that because I want somebody legit to kick our butts. You know?
Yeah, not rookies.
Not rookies.
It looks really stupid.
I'm getting tired of getting kicked by rookies. So that's what happened to me in the last 2 weeks. It's like, this is not okay. All right, let's jump right into your taste of the week. Chef, I know you like to tell everyone about all the delicious things you've made last week.
Oh, no, this week
but
I've got...
But you have something maybe from outside your four walls.
I have something that rarely happens to Thierry, which is Thierry doesn't really go out to breakfast very often.
Uh-huh.
I think the
Are you speaking of yourself in the third person right now?
No, yes, I was kind of doing that.
Okay, I was just checking.
I don't really go to breakfast very often.
Okay.
I think the extent of my breakfast knowledge lies in doing the show with you and getting the muffin from across the street, the egg muffin breakfast, which I must say is absolutely a delight.
Sorely missed.
I sorely miss that. And I must say that out of the probably 1,000 we've had, there's never been any dogs in there. It's a beautiful breakfast. Mm-hmm. I totally enjoy that. But I'm not a person that usually think of going to a restaurant in the morning. My breakfast is usually 2 or 3 cups of coffee and a couple of toast with some jam, and that's my breakfast.
See, I'm just the opposite. I'm a greasy spoon breakfast guy.
Yeah. No, I know you are.
And my latest one that I haunt once a week is the Bay Cafe at Fisherman's Terminal.
Oh, yeah,
it's like hidden there by Chinook's restaurant. And it's a great greasy spoon right there.
So I went to a wedding in Santa Elena. Congratulations to Will and Mary Weathered, because they live a long, happy life. But anyway, I had a breakfast in Santa Elena at a place called Market. And I haven't had a breakfast like this, I don't think ever, where it was so beautifully presented, number one. I had a steak and egg, which is never... I mean, it was 11 in the morning.
That's so a heck
I was
of like, a start.
I was like, you know, it's breakfast, lunch, kind of like a brunch. But a nice steak and egg. But the way it was presented, the way it was cooked, the way it was seasoned, everything was flawless about the whole thing. I was so amazed. I mean, it was, to me, it was served like a dinner. And Kathy had a frittata, and it was the same thing. It was perfectly cooked. Everything was delicious. The pepper was roasted, seasoned. Everything was and presented beautifully on a plate. With no frou-frou, you know, sometimes you get that piece of melon that's unripe and whatever, the grapes that don't even belong there. None of this stuff. There was everything on the plate was beautiful, edible, and it just reminded me that I understand why people treat breakfast like one of the greatest meal of the day as well.
Yeah.
But I think it's never...
Well, most likely. Go ahead.
Never enough than people put that much care into it. I was very impressed by that. So kudos to Market in Santa Elena for breakfast.
Great. Fantastic.
Yeah.
To me, you haven't eaten in 12 hours, generally, when you get up for breakfast. And then I get a couple cups of coffee, and it's like, okay, that's on an empty stomach now. And then I'm just ready, you know. Right. And so I'd much rather skip dinner than I would breakfast.
Right. No, I get it. I can understand.
We only have 30 seconds left. But I would say my taste of the week is that I'm starting to go to restaurants again, and I just want to remind people that they're open.
Yep.
That everyone's being very careful, and that if you don't go to the restaurants of your choice in your neighborhood, whether it's your neighborhood or downtown or wherever,
it will not.
They are not going to be there. And
tomorrow.
We saw what happened to Ivers this week. They've closed both of their full service restaurants to concentrate on their fast food restaurants. But I went to Thai Tung for lunch the other day and just had my usual there, which is Chinese greens sautéed in garlic with fish on top, like a
rockfish.
A rockfish or something like that on top. And that's my favorite lunch there. But it just struck me that, you know, Thai Tung has been there since 1935. And it's not going to be there much longer. We're starting to get to that point in this epidemic that restaurants are not going to be able to survive
that's
much. Right?
So, 6 months into it, now more than ever, we need your support.
And support the ones that are using good caution and do things correctly.
Yep.
I'm not saying go out and get a crowd and, you know, go get crazy. I'm saying there's every one of them that's open has, or not, I shouldn't say, most that I've been that are open are using great precautions.
Right.
Up next, it's a Meatball Fantasy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. All right, here we are. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show in downtown Seattle. We are at the Hot Stove Society Cooking School, which I happen to own, which is super nice and super
and
fun.
And very nice, and it's restarted, too.
Yeah, so we're doing virtual classes here now. If you want to know more about the hot stove, just go to hotstovesociety.com. Right?
That's right.
Right. Madeline, how do people get to the radio show site?
They can go to Facebook.com and search for Hot Stove Society Radio Show. That's where we've been able to get a couple of our comments for different segments, such as Pass It Down. This actual question came from a listener as a message to us, so they wanted to send us a note. They can also email us at HotStoveSocietyRadio@TomDouglas.com, and they can let us know anytime. We just posted a question for the next Torture Tom and Terry segment. So we've been asking our fans to send us their suggestions.
Oh, now you have them partake.
Oh, great.
Exactly. It wasn't bad enough
we've
to
gotten
have
so many comments, the most amount of comments in just the short 10 minutes.
So what was Callista's
So she sent us a question. Last week, Tom talked about making meatballs for future use. She wanted to know if you have a preference on freezing them raw or freezing them already cooked. And what's sort of the best way? I thought it would be good to sort of, I don't know either. I would want to know.
Well, personally, I would go raw. That would be my first choice because if you, and then when you're ready to eat them, you just thaw them out gently, especially if you know the day before. Put them in your refrigerator to thaw out gently. Put a paper towel on the bottom. Any moisture gets drained out and sucked up, and then cook them again. But that would be my preference, Tom.
Yeah, you obviously don't know anything about meatballs. No, I'm just kidding. That is certainly the way a way to do it. I cooked mine in advance, and I don't know how I feel about the whole raw or cooked thing. First of all, I wouldn't even let them thaw. If they are frozen and they are raw, I would just start to cook them. Right. I have tried this over and over with everything from steak to lamb racks to chicken thighs to you name it, to cook straight out of the freezer from frozen. And as long as you use a little lower temperature, it works perfectly fine. The thing I like about cooking the meatballs from raw is that you end up with, if you're depending on what you're going to end up with from a product standpoint, like what do you right. want for dinner? Do you want spaghetti and meatballs? So if that's the case, then mm-hmm. Even raw or the pre-cooked ones, you're still going to end up with fat in your pan.
Of course.
And they're going to be nice and brown. And I put cheese in my meatballs so that browns. And then you put your sauce into that fat.
Right.
Right? So that you pick up and you kind of braise your meatballs in that for a few minutes, depending on if they're done or if they're still a little frozen or whatever. But I personally, I cook mine because I'm just making it easy. I'm doing this kind of freezer larding with my meatballs. And I just want it to be done.
Right.
Those people that cook with microwaves all the time, I would just definitely pre-brown and pre-cook and pop them in,
right.
IQF them, and then just put in so you can pull out each individual meatball. So, Calista, I hope that answers your question. You can go either way. I prefer browning. Terry says raw. So you can have it from there.
And it's perfectly normal. That's usually the standard of all relationship.
So it's funny, meatballs. You know, I love meatballs, and I like making them.
Right.
And I like if you were like, I invited you and Kathy over to my house, and we kind of just said we're gonna have a meatball party, right?
Right.
And maybe we're gonna watch a football game and have a meatball party, and then you just as a group you make all these meatballs together, and then everyone takes home what they want to take home from that perspective of, so everyone gets the job done, but it's very social. And yesterday, my rub team, who packs all the spice rub in the jars and stuff, I'm out of jars. I ran out of jars. They're not due for 10 more days.
Ooh,
my goodness. So I have these five people. And whenever I go into the rub side of the warehouse out in Ballard, These people are around the packing table, and they're all chatting, you know, even now through their face mask and hair nets and gloves. But they all just chat, and they sing along to the music and have a ball, just chatting away. So yesterday I have all this Prosser produce, right? It's time. Prosser produce is thick and heavy, and I don't have enough people to process it. And so by chance, I now have these five people who have nothing to do because I'm out of jars, so I brought them over. To watch them stand around the table, like I gave them this mountain of green beans, which to me, I would have looked at it, it would have buckled my knees. Right? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it would have buckled my knees because it's like,
cut the ends of both of those, of those green beans.
Number one, I only cut the stem end. But they just got around the table. They just started talking. And next thing you know, they're not even looking at their fingers. They're just feeling their way. And they had that mountain of green beans done in 15 minutes, maybe.
Better find some other vegetable.
I had 10 totes of peppers to slice, to pickle peppers, right?
Yeah.
And I've got 10 more that came last night from Jackie, brought home with her. Boom, done, right? So pickled green. I had 6 totes of cantaloupes that we're going to, I just wanted peeled, seeded, and then we're going to make cantaloupe margaritas out of them. So I'm going to make the puree, freeze the puree, and then they'll be ready to go when we want to make our margaritas. But boom, done. Tomato sauce. 10 totes or 10 lugs of tomatoes, right? For tomato soup or tomato sauce. Boom, done. It's like, oh my God. When you could just create a little event for yourself, right? take some of the drudgery out of the prep that you're doing, the work that you're doing. Gather around the table, get the family around the table, turn on the TV, put on some dancing music, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's a super fun way to process all these things.
It's looking at the task like it's not a task. It's just, you know, you have to do something, so you do something, and you're doing that, as opposed to, oh my God, it's a mountain of green beans, you know.
Right. Or you're thinking about, I'm really going to like these in January and February, right?
Of course.
These pickled beans, knowing that I grew them, I prepped them, I pickled them, and now I'm eating them. It's really fun.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So,
wow.
Meatball Fantasy, I want to go back to that because I just kind of got off on that little tangent there about getting around the prep table, not just the dinner table, but the prep table. But we were going to name one of our restaurants Meatball Fantasy. I love meatballs, and I got my love for meatballs from my former CEO and great friend, Pamela Hinckley, because I never really thought about meatballs in the way that she did. Meatballs, to me, it was like, okay, do you want spaghetti meatballs? Do you want Italian sausage, rigatoni? It was like an option.
But when you think about it.
But when you think about a meatball and the fact that everyone, like a crab cake maybe or something, everyone has somewhat of a family recipe or a personal preference, whether it's they want chicken or turkey meatball or they want beef and veal, like a minor beef, veal, and pork.
Right.
Everyone's got a little thing, and then the meatball starts to speak to you in a way that that maybe you hadn't really thought about it before.
Right.
It's like you start to you get some taste memories out of when you eat that meatball, right? So, and you start to think about, okay, what else can I do? So I made duck meatballs.
I put diced shredded shallots, roasted shallots in my meatball.
Uh-huh.
So I sweat the shallots, cool them off, and then put them into the meat.
Right. Delicious.
A nice little sweetness added to the, and no leaking from the raw shallots, because if you put raw onion or shallots, there is a little wetness
leakage,
that comes
right? When they cook, they you know, just like in a, when you saute them in a pan, they leak moisture.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you golden brown your shallots first, put them on the side, cool them off, and then put them into there, they're not leaching anymore.
The other thing about meatballs is texture, right?
Oh yeah.
So I fell in love with the texture. Like when I get my whole meat, force meat done to make the meatballs, I got my cheese, my eggs, my breadcrumbs, everything's in there. I like to put it into the KitchenAid mixer at that point with the paddle and beat it a little bit. Kind
so
of
there
whip
is
it.
A little rubberiness to it, like a little it,
they bind,
tighter.
They bind tighter, but they also get a little bit airy.
Right.
And I like the texture when I bite into it. That's more of a creamy texture than sometimes it can be more granular from the ground meat.
Correct.
So try these things with you and your family and stuff like that.
It's inexpensive to play with meatballs. Yeah. You buy inexpensive meat and ground already.
Yeah, exactly. And then have your own meatball fantasy. Yeah. Up next on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show, the history of the bread and butter pickle on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Chef in the chapeau.
Bonjour, Monsieur Douglas.
Bonjour, Chef. So nice to see you.
As well.
Yes.
As well. Always.
I don't know why that just came out sounding like I was trying to sound French, but so nice to see you.
You did pretty well. You sounded like somebody like with an accent.
Yeah.
I know all about it.
I know. You go back to France every year to practice yours, right?
That's right.
Exactly.
It cost me a lot of money just to keep that beautiful accent.
Speaking of which, you're going on a boat show, on a boat ride in June, right?
In June, we're going through the Rhône Valley from Avignon to Lyon. And it's booking quite fast. We're all along with three winemakers. We have Côte Bonneville, MJ Ventner, and Lingua Franca from down in Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to have a blast. It's going to be fabulous. I've done that trip the other way around, Lyon to Avignon.
Mm-hmm.
This time we're doing from Avignon to Lyon. I mean, tons of great meals, beautiful wineries to visit, Valrhona Chocolate Museum.
Lovely.
All kind of different crazy stuff and a beautiful place in the world, a beautiful page of history in France. So,
how do people find out more about it?
Go to northwesttravel.com, and you'll find all the information there.
There you go.
And right now, there's actually a discount price for booking before the end of September. So if it's your birthday in the next couple of days, go right at it.
A huge piece of news came out this week, before we get to bread and butter pickles, about Pebble Mine.
Yes.
And the president of Pebble Mine Group had to resign this week. somebody did some videos. My favorite part was they were saying, well, these videos are clandestine or they're unethical. It's like, but the videos caught these two guys being completely unethical. And so they were, it's funny how they were complaining about that. But anyway, so this group posed as investors, possible investors, I believe, to into the Pebble Mine partnership. And so these two high-powered people, the president and CEO, on video told these people all the lies they had been telling.
Correct.
About their participation in Pebble Mine, you know, about them. Really, the intention is that this is a much bigger project than what we're telling people right now.
It is not 20 years, it's a lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's just everything that we've been afraid of, they came out and said it on video. And then what really got them into some big trouble was that they suggested that they had both the Alaska senators and the governor in their pocket.
Yep.
Or at least knew how to control them.
Right. And keep it silent is the right way to make it. And
yeah,
I mean, they
and
were
including
also,
the current administration in Washington felt like they were on the path to having them. Anyway, this all came out this
Congratulations
week.
Congratulations to all the big, strong fighters for Pebble Mine. It's a victory for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad that we have to go that route. Too bad that, you know, it has to be processed that way. But the truth comes out eventually. And
well, the big guy that's been pushing this for years now, 12 years, who was in line to make $12 million if he could get the administration to sign the bottom line, had to resign.
Yep.
So that is awesome. I don't know why the CEO didn't have to resign, but it's going to be interesting to see where this goes from here for Pebble Mine.
Yep.
Up next, bread and butter pickles. Maddie, our producer, what got you down on this story? What got you into bread and butter pickles? You don't seem the type to me.
I know. I think they're delicious.
Me too. They're sweet and crunchy.
They're just a staple. And again, I kind of fell in the trap that they're talking about. So this was an article that I found on Savour. It was written actually back in May. But I fell in the trap of making the assumption of what bread and pickles, you know, the story behind bread and butter pickles. You know, they're a staple. This is a reliable type of pickle you can put on any sandwich. And sure enough, it's this elusive story of the bread and butter pickle sandwiches.
Having read the story, and I know you're going to put a little way for people to get it on our
we'll
site,
put it up
but a link, I believe they call that, they. You know, I grew up with these things. My family's a sweet pickle house. I mean, we have the dills, but I would layer these things. My favorite sandwich as a kid was white bread with lots of butter, boiled ham, which is what the deli ham was called, the Heinz cocktail sauce.
That's so weird.
Which is like
ketchup. I don't know what
it's
that's
ketchup
doing
with
now.
A little bit of relish in it.
Yeah.
And then layers of bread and butter pickles on top. So that's my idea of bread and butter pickles when I grew up. So, but the article was all about the bread and butter pickle sandwich.
Exactly.
Which is where bread and butter comes in, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, and that would be more my cup of tea to eat something like that. I would definitely, first of all, I would toast the bread, number one. Number two.
Now you're getting crazy.
No, I would just toast the bread just because white bread just by itself is really not, to me, something that's...
It's soft and mushy. That's what it was supposed to be.
Exactly.
With the crunchy pickles.
Not into it, but that's okay. I would toast it, and I would definitely put the butter on it, and I would lay down some beautiful sweet and sour pickle right on top of that, and then make a sandwich out of that. Now, in today's world, I would definitely reach in the fridge and a couple slices of salami right in between those.
Yeah, well, you would get out the Dijon mustard and put cornichons on
that's
it, right?
Right.
Exactly. So this Eric Kim, who wrote the article for Savour, he kind of took it as a challenge to find out the pedigree of this recipe. Like, where did it come from? Who first made the first bread and butter pickle? I read through the whole article. He never really gets there, does he?
No, it's still this elusive story. I mean, it's this mystery, so to speak, that people, you know, and you'll see, too, later in the article, how people commented about putting bread and butter pickles with their peanut butter sandwiches and making all these strange combinations, but he had yet to find the actual source of who first called them bread and butter pickles and the reason why. So it was interesting to me because, again, you fall in this trap of sort of assuming what the history is of a very common staple, and sure enough, this
my assumption would be that this is a depression time, like a very hard economical downturn.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, people have always have pickles because that's very inexpensive to buy.
Or so to make.
You have pickle, you have butter is actually a luxury in hard time, mm-hmm. but still. And then white bread. I mean, that's yeah. those are staples that usually most households, even in hard time, have around. So that would be a great way to make a sandwich and make everybody happy.
It was interesting that even Irma Rombauer's The Joy of Cooking never had even an inkling of a touch on it, where she had touches on all sorts of sandwiches from the South and from all over the place, really. Right. But I made 50 pounds of, you know, Jackie brought over a few totes of cucumbers, and I made 50 pounds of bread and butter pickles.
Right.
And I took a gallon of, or 2 gallons of white wine vinegar, 2 gallons of cider vinegar, and then 4 gallons of water,
mm-hmm.
so a 1-to-1. You, right. I know you go 3-2-1.
Yeah.
It was 1-to-1, and then I used up the ends of 3 half-gallons of honey.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of mustard seed, turmeric, which gives it that really cool yellow
nice color. Yellow
color,
yeah.
Lots of coriander seed. Another thing that got done yesterday in our little prep parade yesterday was we peeled 20 pounds of garlic that Jackie had
said. Dang.
Oh, my God. My team was almost crying. They were not very happy about part. But so we had all this garlic and juniper berries and allspice.
Nice.
And just kind of make a spiced pickle, basically.
Sure.
So it was really fun. I'm looking forward to having them in a couple of days. These are not canned. These, like you and I
right.
like to
these
make,
are live.
Right? We make these quick pickles, right?
Right, right.
Where you just take your big vat of cucumbers, you heat up the spices and the vinegars and the water and everything, and then you pour it over
correct.
The cucumbers.
Correct.
And then I would say within 3 days, they'll be ready to go.
Yeah.
As far
yeah.
as I'm concerned.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
And how are you going to use them?
How am I going to use them?
Mm-hmm.
At all of our sandwiches at the dock, whether it's the Italian beef sandwich or whatever it happens to be, the eggplant parm sandwich, we put a little relish with like a little jardinera is what the Italians call it, like a little vegetable. Vegetable relish from the garden, right? Whatever it happens to be. And that's what it is. So we'll pickle carrots, green beans, peppers, cauliflowers, whatever we get, fennel, onions, and then put them all together and make this nice little jardinera.
Yeah, the cool thing about pickling all that is you're keeping it longer alive and a better product.
Yeah, exactly.
So
it's a great way to use up, for us, use up all this deliciousness that's coming from the farm that we don't have restaurants open can use it right now, right? So it's super fun. It's a good project. I can't wait to make my father-in-law's famous antipasto. Mm. That's going to in my future in the next few weeks. We should do a little segment on antipasto, the classic kind of Italian Grandma Croce's.
Our pass it down segment.
Pass it down.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. I will put this article up on our Facebook page from Savour Magazine. Again, the story is The Elusive Story of the Bread and Butter Pickle Sandwich by Eric Kim. So I will put that up later today.
Up next, the Senesee on the Hot Stove Society Show, Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's time for the Senesee on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And we'd like to welcome Sina and Rich to the line. Sina is coming to us from Wenatchee and Rich from Cordova. Is that what I understand?
Alaska.
Hello, all.
Hi.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and it's a pleasure to have eaten that beautiful Copper River coho and, of course, the black cod or sablefish. What a nice treat. And apparently anyone that wants these can get them.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the beauty of Senesee. We have been a fishing family for generations, and we're spoiled. We get the best fish all the time, and that's pretty much the premise for Senesee is, how do we get that beautiful, perfect fish out to everybody else?
And just how do you do that, Sina?
I'm glad you asked.
Well, Rich Fish is in Alaska. As you can hear, he's in Alaska right now. So he spends a lot of time in Alaska. We both grew up in the Puget Sound in the Seattle area on Vashon Island. So we have our roots in the Puget Sound, which is in Alaska, and I'm over on the dry side in Wenatchee area. So when we set out to do this, we, of course, like I said, we have our gorgeous fish we've always had, and we used to drive it around to friends and family all around the state when Rich came home in the fall. That got a little bit difficult. So we thought, boy, this 4 days of delivering fish, that's a real pain. Let's start a whole business. Let's bring it to everybody, and let's figure out a way to get fish shipped into people's door. That will be easier. So now we spend year-round getting fish straight to people's door. What we do, we Rich catches it in Alaska, and we catch, cut, vacuum seal, we wrap in parchment, and we flash freeze up there. And that is really the key to our quality, is that consistent quality, is the flash freezing up in Alaska. And then we bring it down here, and I pack it into small boxes and put and then ship it to people's door around the nation, which is really pretty cool.
I think it's very cool than customers or people can actually have Copper River delivered to their door, especially in a frozen fashion where, you know, it's a good investment when you buy Copper River salmon. But it's great to have that delivered at your door frozen, and you can just use what you need as you need, and to have a standard of quality that is, you know, top, because it's right fresh off the boat.
And you get to know, I saw the pictures of you, and was it two kids that I saw that you have?
Oh, yeah, we have three kids.
Three kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're buying from a family, you know, literally a fish farming family when you think about it, because that's what they do, is they farm the seas, right? So, which is different than farmed fish.
Yes, thank you.
So I really like that. Sena Sea is the SENASEA.com is where you can go online and look at all the different products and enjoy that. Rich, when you catch these fish, what's the process?
So first, you know, to tell you that my career has transformed from being a 100% fisherman to now we own the processing plant where all the fish is processed at too. So not only do I fish, but I also help run the plant here in Cordova, 60 North Seafood. So what happens is we go out fishing. When we leave to go fishing, we take a lot of ice this fish down, as we bring it aboard, you know, we're bleeding it, taking really good care of it, and then bring it back to our plant where, we have our expertise crew, dive in and, per order and start portioning up the fish. And then, we wrap each individual piece of fish, with parchment paper, and then, use our roll stock machine and, to backpack it. And then, where it's blast froze and then boxed into Sena specifications for, you know, bulk boxing, and then either flown down on Alaska Airlines or we barge it down on AML down to Seattle and then pick it up from there.
Super fun. I think that parchment, Terry, is a super good idea. I like how that would protect the fish from the hard freeze, to the meat of the flesh of the fish.
It's a very clever. You've obviously done your homework on that.
Yep, and you know what this parchment paper does is it just is another barrier of from freezer burn and everything else. And it's such it's amazing how well it holds the product together.
Right.
The other thing is you said you backpack it, and that's important too, because when you see things in your own freezer at home and you see all the little frost crystals and stuff in there, that's because it's not vacuum packed, right? So that's good way to do that. You're third generation fisherman up there, Rich. Tell us about that.
So that would be on Sena's side of the family that where the fishing comes in, and it all starts with Sena's mom's side of the family, which is the Jangards, and they're illustrious fishing career. So I can let Sena speak to where that all comes from.
Yeah, my uncle, Lars Jangard, he immigrated from Norway to Ballard. So he and his brothers would immigrate to Ballard and get a boat. That was kind of the deal. And then they were part of the Seattle fleet out of Fisherman's Terminal, doing mostly halibut back then. They go up and fish Alaska. They did the coast as well. So it really comes from him. And then my dad got involved through my mom. So he was the son-in-law. He broke in on my grandpa's boat. And then as it becomes time, you know, nepotism is strong in fishing. So when it was time, my uncle actually came up through the Cape Flattery And then they had to put my dad over to my uncle's boat for the proper, you know, so he could come up through that boat. So actually my dad came up on the Alrita and was trained on the Alrita, and he became a lifelong fisherman. And then he had three daughters. So when I got married, Rich got involved.
I see.
And he came up through my dad's boat. So it's actually really interesting. It's three generations of fishing. By blood, it's three generations of fishing wives.
Let's not forget that either.
Which is, I would say, maybe equally important.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, absolutely. It is.
And we've been sort of outsourcing our fishermen for that. But Rich got involved right before we were married and during, and lucky for us, unfortunately, he's a fabulous fisherman and really took to it and loves it. And so that's what makes it all work.
Fantastic. We have about 30 seconds to a minute left. Do you have a subscription service, or how do people get a consistent delivery from you? Or do they just have to order it every time?
Yeah, it's really simple. You go to cnsea.com and you choose your fish, and right under where you would choose your fish, you can do a one-time purchase, or you can just choose subscribe and save. And the really nice thing about that is you can choose once a month, 2 months, every 3 months, what works for you. The size of the box is very customizable, and then you don't have to remember to go on, and you don't have to put your credit card in. There's a lot of great email systems. You get an email warning before it comes. You get tracking information. So you never get frozen fish at your door when you're not expecting it. So we have a lot of very happy subscribers that appreciate getting this fish year-round to their door. And they eat more fish, more great fish when they
and wild fish and go. Sustainably caught fish and all of the exactly. Good things that you don't always know when you go to the grocery store. So
right, it can be a little bit hard at the grocery store.
That's Rich and Sina from cnsea.com, and thank you so much. Good luck to your families and good luck on the fishing seasons. And it's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Up next, our second hour, we have a pass it down recipe memory. Daisley Gordon's going to be here from Cafe Campania, and our tasty trivia brought to you by Rump with Love on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Tom Douglas here.
Jerry Rotiro, the chef in the hat, also here.
We have another full hour. I love our show, by the way.
I know,
so it's fun to be here with you and with the whole team. Madeline Dow Pennington is our producer. Amy Richardson's here today. Talked about the benefit for the Ballard Food Bank. And you're here. We get to talk food and wine and beverages. We got a big next hour coming up. We're going to talk to chef owner of Cafe Campania, Daisley Gordon. You know, I hired Daisley like 26 years ago, 27 years ago.
You did?
I want to say at Etta's, yeah.
And, I didn't realize he worked at Etta's.
Yeah, for about 10 minutes he worked there.
Oh, cool.
And then, I don't. It might have been 10 days. I'm not exactly sure. That's too many
we'll
bottles.
Ask him.
Too many bottles of wine to go, but we'll ask him. But he's a nice man and
super nice.
Has been doing good work at Cafe Campania for a very long time now. Our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge is going to come up at the end of the show. And, of course, our segment on recipe and the importance of them and the importance of passing them down.
Passing it down. Don't lose the box.
We're getting so many good stories. Madeline every week sends us an email saying, read this.
I know. It's very fun.
Super, super fun. Okay. It's time for the Ballard Food Bank Breakfast Benefit, October 3rd and 4th. And Amy Richardson of our team, who's kind of spearheaded this project, is going to tell us a little bit more about it and how you can come participate in more ways than one. Hi, Amy.
Hello, Amy.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
You're 20 feet away if you want to take your mask off. Maybe you don't.
It's a good thing about this place is there is plenty of room for just a few of us.
So. Yeah.
Okay, so tell us about this. On the dock.
On the dock. Mm-hmm. We wanted to do a pancake breakfast.
Right.
And we love being in Ballard so much, and we thought we really wanted to help our neighbors at the Ballard Food Bank and do a breakfast pop-up and do a donation drive with them.
Every month we feature one nonprofit, and we do a benefit for them through the dock. Our dock is at 52nd and 14th Avenue Northwest in Ballard. So if you're coming over the Ballard Bridge going northbound, You just go past the Amazon. That's 52nd, the Amazon store there, and then take a right right there at the Amazon store, and you're on 52nd. Just go one block east, and you're on 14th.
Yeah.
So there you go. So I know we're making pancakes, Chef Terry. Is that okay?
I'm excited. No crepes?
We're not doing crepes. We're just doing regular old Loretta's pancakes out of Seattle Kitchen, or the Lola pancake.
We're doing the
right?
Lola pancakes.
The Lola pancakes.
Oh, yeah. Those are delish.
Mm. And the pancake breakfast is $8.99 with $2 going to the Ballard Food Bank.
Correct.
The Hunter's breakfast, same thing. $2 goes to the Ballard Food Bank. It's $20, but it's got a lot more stuff on it.
Yeah, it's got a lot more stuff.
And then if you bring a can of food or some sort of in-date edible food product that we can then take over to the food bank, cans work out the best. Canned meat products, like protein products, work out even better. In-date, which is important, right? Because
expired.
If you give the food bank something expired, they have to pay to throw it away. They cannot hand it out. It's not legal.
Yeah.
And then you'll get a mochi donut.
Yes.
So what flavors? I know I saw some mochi donuts last week that were s'more flavors.
Yeah, we have s'more. We have a really delicious pumpkin spice with pepitas, funfetti. We have a chocolate toffee right now as well. And I think Stacy's been doing a vanilla with blue sprinkles for the Seahawks.
For the Seahawks. She loves the Hawks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super fun. So if you bring a can of food and... Mm-hmm. What we're saying is bring a bag of food, but you'll still only get one donut.
Sure.
But, you know, feel free. Just bring a food donation that day. Make sure it's in date, and then we'll give you a mochi donut.
And here are some urgent needs that they're looking for right now. Soups and chili, peanut butter, individual cereals, stable juice boxes, mac and cheese, chilies, ravioli, granola bars, individual packages of nuts. They have a great website that says their urgent needs. And also, if you can't come, you can also donate on their Amazon wish list, which is really cool.
Really? What's that like? What does that mean?
So you can just go to ballardfoodbank.org and look at food donations. And on their Amazon wish list, you just hit that button and you can donate directly.
Oh, I see. So you're literally buying it from Amazon to have it shipped to them.
Yeah,
essentially.
It's really cool.
Yeah. And does Amazon have a way to give you a discount on that or not?
I'm unclear on that, but we'll find that out.
It's probably not. That would be awfully...
Yeah, I'm looking right now. It doesn't look like it.
Yeah, awfully hard to do. Super exciting. You know, when I'm... Terry and I have been on the board of on and off for Food Lifeline for years and years, and Ballard Food Bank was always one of our folks. And it's... The importance of proteins is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's the most expensive, hardest thing to get.
The most amazing part is to try to remember all year round that there are people who need food all year round.
Yeah.
That's the part that's really hard. It's to try
Not just Thanksgiving? What do you mean?
Not just Thanksgiving, not just Christmas. It's all year round. It's 12 months out of the year. And now, more than ever, so many people are out of a job. So many people. I was just reading that this morning in an article in the... Observer, National Observer, there was an article about how many people are actually on food stamp and needing food from food bank. It's in the millions. It's crazy.
As this drags on, it's not going to get any better.
Right.
You know,
I think I read that there was one out of four family that needs help with food. I mean, that's some serious numbers. This is getting really drastically scary.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to come have breakfast with us?
I will definitely make sure I put my money where my mouth is.
Our Hunter's breakfast. Read off what's on our... I know it's $20, but read off what's on the Hunter's breakfast.
Hunter's breakfast. Pork chop, Italian chicken sausage, bacon, pancakes, and a baked apple with date butter.
Yum.
I'm going to need a nap when I'm done with that.
And you'll be on the dock flipping pancakes.
I know. That's awesome.
Yeah. You should come down and do like a star turn.
I will.
On the
griddle. Bring my own crepes.
Yeah. <I'm just
kidding>. Exactly. All right. Up next, it's Pass It Down, favorite segment of ours, where we actually ask you to send us a recipe that not only is just a list of ingredients and a list of directions, but it is a memory that you have
of how
you acquired that recipe, how you saw it when you were growing up. How you enjoyed it, and what does it make you think when you make it now? Sometimes what we've seen in our list is that people actually want us to fix this long-term. They hate the family recipe, but they love the memory of who made it, right?
Right.
So they want us to fix maybe, or at least
we can fix the
massage dish, the recipe,
but we can fix the memory.
Hopefully, it's a good memory. Yeah, exactly. So, Amy, how do people get tickets for our breakfast?
Go to TomDouglas.com. We will be doing it Saturday and Sunday. That's October 3rd and 4th from 9 to 1. And you can pre-order everything that you like and even order the correct times that you want. We'll just have our no-contact doc, and people can wave to you flipping pancakes.
Perfect. Up next, it's our Pass It Down segment, where we ask you to inform us about an important recipe that got passed to you from of members of your family, or maybe you made one that you fully intend on making a classic in your household. On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. You're in the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And we have you glued to your speakers or to in your garden or in your kitchen. I hope you're having fun with recipes that have come down through your family. This is our segment called Pass It Down. Don't let the recipe box die with you. And that's something that's important to me. It's right here on the wall here at the Hot Stove. It's important to us that you celebrate your family heritage and that you recognize that a recipe isn't just ingredients or directions. It's really all the history that comes with it. So we ask our listeners to kind of chime in on this. And Chef Thierry, I want to take a second to wish you a happy birthday.
Oh, you're and, very sweet.
Yeah, tomorrow's your birthday. And also curious about a recipe that you would like your sons to make when you're old and decrepit and they have to cook for you. What is a recipe that they're going to make and they're going to tell their children that, you know, Grandpa used to make this recipe all the time. Matter of fact, it probably paid for this house. I know one right off the top of my head. Your caviar and egg recipe probably paid for your house.
They've had it many times. I don't even know if they want to even learn how to do it. They just love to eat it. The burger at Luke is also one of their favorite.
I can't believe that.
But
I can't believe that you would think that that's what people are going to pass down from you.
No. I think that's probably
really?
One of them. Well, you can't just have one, but I think the most, the hardest one is probably often I would bring when I was at Rovers. I used to make tuna of like wild salmon, you know, just take the fillet, roll it, tie it up, and I would bring tuna of salmon, lobster sauce, a good rice, toasted almond in the rice. And they would go nuts over that. The lobster sauce specifically was one of them.
And have you taught them how to make that?
Have not taught them how to make it. Because they just keep asking, oh, can we have that?
Yeah.
I need to make sure then they know how to make it, because I'm not going to always make it. Obviously,
right.
I'm not going to be here forever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a very important thing. I should definitely, at the grand list, instead of teaching them how to steal it from me, to learn how to make it for themselves.
Exactly. And let them buy the lobster this
time. That's right.
Let's show and them, the wild
show
salmon.
Them how good of a life they've had.
Yeah, exactly. So, Madeline, our producer, you've talked to Pam Bird, and she had an idea for us, or at least a thought about a recipe, but not even really sure what it was, right?
It's a mystery.
It's a mystery,
to solve. Yeah, our listener, Pam Bird, sent us this note. It was super sweet. Her grandparents are from Italy, and she has this fond memory of her great-grandmother, again, who only spoke Italian, creating this dish. And, you know, when I first read it, I thought it was risotto, but she clarified that it is not risotto. And I think she's looking for guidance from you two on how to make it some type of a recipe that she can pass down. Her son loves to cook. I think she wants to pass it down to him. But it is a tomato sauce base. There was beef in it, but it was more of like leftover roast beef, is what she said. Mm-hmm. But then it also was, you know, basically, she said, whatever cheapest rice there was.
So, don't go out and search for Arborio or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And you go to De Laurentiis to buy rice.
Totally. But my favorite part, though, is she actually clarified that, you know, there probably wasn't a recipe, right? We've talked about this before. There wasn't probably a handwritten recipe back in the day. They made their own broth. They had their rice that they could find, any leftover meat. But she's kind of been searching for something that would give her some guidance on how to recreate it. She did find a Nigella recipe that was sort of like a risotto bolognese that I think she said was a little bit similar. Mm-hmm. But
Nigella Lawson?
Yes.
Okay.
And that, you know, she just needs some help. It's a mystery to solve.
Huh. And so to me, the mystery would be, when do you add the rice? Because if you cook rice too long, there's a thing in Chinese cuisine called congee, right? Which is rice that's just cook the heck with water, and it just kind of melts and becomes soup. And so it sounds like the rice still was in its form when she served this dish.
Yeah, exactly. It sounded like, too, that's
to
why...
To me, it sounds like a very practical leftover dish made out of necessity because there is some little bit of roast beef sliced in the fridge. Rice is easy to make, so you make your rice while you're making your tomato sauce. Put the meat in the tomato sauce.
The leftover meat, because you couldn't possibly cook the meat.
No.
Or
it's
else
leftover.
The rice would disintegrate.
It's leftover roast, and then put your rice on top of that, and then serve that as a dish, or maybe even just put the rice in the dish, put the sauce and everything on top, and that's what she kind of a risotto, but not really, because it's probably mixed together and a little bit soupy, a little bit saucy kind of idea. But I can see how somebody would make that out of necessity more than trying to make a dish from scratch from that. Because I don't believe that anybody would make a dish from scratch that way.
Jackie's grandmother, which I never had this dish, but Jackie speaks fondly of it, Sunday night dinners where there would be just lots of different dishes around the table and many different kinds of meat dishes on the same table, right? So, but she always talks about the short rib, beef short rib braised in tomato sauce. And then put over pasta or put over rice or something. It does sound a little bit like a pot roast that's just using rice, stirring in rice like you would a jambalaya into the sauce, right?
Which is why she thinks risotto, but not because it's probably saucy, so it gives you that impression that it's a risotto. Right. But it's just rice added at the last minute to a dish, cooked rice added at the last minute into a dish that's already ready to eat.
So, Pam, I'm curious if Pam could tell us how long, how thick the rice is in this recipe when she thought it was perfect. You know what I'm saying? Rather, is it soupy? Is it thicker? It sounds stewy to me.
Yeah.
If it's got the texture of risotto, but it's not risotto, right? It's not slow-cooked arborio.
Yeah, that's what I would imagine.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's a necessity dish in the way of leftovers. You probably could replace the beef by chicken. You could probably do, we were talking about meatball earlier in the show. You could do probably some kind of consistency like that. Like she said, she used the bolognese from Nigella Lawson. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably...
When I think of risotto, I think of that creamy Parmesan. And, it's funny because there's not really a cheese component in this either. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, too, if, it was the rice cooked separately and then added in.
I definitely think it's cooked separately and then added at the
sounds
end.
Sounds like a classic Raid the Kitchen leftovers.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
I just want to say, Terry, we talk about this segment in a way where the story is important or more important than the recipe. And so Pam writes, my grandparents were from Treviso, Italy. They immigrated to a small town in central Ontario, Canada. I'm not sure exactly when, but all their children were born in Canada. And the last time she had this dish that has got her so wound up in her head from Grandma Nona was when she was a teenager. She's now 60. So she hasn't had this dish in close to 50 years.
Wow.
And yet that dish still sits on her brain in a way that connects her to her family and her family's history all that time ago. She said her parents would make it occasionally. I'm pretty sure I have a cousin that makes it occasionally. I have a son who likes to cook, so he will definitely get the recipe, at least what the recipe is perceived to be, because it wasn't a written recipe. And I must also tell you that I don't think they ever had recipes, right? So this was a long time ago, very small town. There was no store-bought broth, no marinara sauce that you could buy, no arborio rice. So the closest recipe that I have found was Nigella's, as Maddie said. And so I love hearing that story. That's a really important part of this segment. And thank you for sharing that, Pam. It was super fun, and it made us all kind of tear up and waiting for, thinking about...
Gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, I know.
We definitely need to tell Pam, you need to make that dish one way or the other, figuring it out. Try it again. Try to make it.
Well, it reminded me, I wasn't on his deathbed, but certainly it was during his hospice stay when I asked Jim Cross, my father-in-law, okay, you've got to tell me how you made the antipasto, grandma's antipasto, right? Because I want to keep that tradition alive. And, he would, just methodically kind of walk through it. And I could tell he really enjoyed being asked, and I really enjoyed asking.
Of course.
And it was super fun. And up next on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show, we're going to talk to Daisley Gordon, chef and owner of Cafe Campagna in the Pike Place Market on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Tom Douglas here.
Terry Rotirolo, chef in the hat.
Chef, we have Chef Daisley Gordon in the house.
Very happy to have him here. Hi, yeah, Daisley.
Bonjour.
Nice to see you. Cafe Campagna in the Pike Place Market. So if you are wondering where that is, I know the market's a big place, but it's in the base of the Inn at the Market, right? So
yes,
you know
the
where
Inn at the Market Hotel, and we share Post Alley with Sur La Table.
Sur La Table and Beecher's Cheese.
And Beecher's, yeah. Right there at the corner of Pine and Post Alley since the summer of 1994.
Wow, and when did you take over ownership?
I took over, I became a partner in 2012 and the full owner in 2016.
Super cool.
Started working there as a cook after a glorious month with you, Tom.
I said it, Terry. I said it. I think we hired Daisley for 10 minutes.
No. Gavin and the whole gang down there. Yeah. It was. And E.T. showed up with no hair, is what I remember.
Have a shaved cut, yeah.
And of course, I had interviewed with Thierry in his little place in Rovers, which was beautiful. So it was a great way to kick things off. But I landed with Tamara and Jim and those guys. And it's lead cook 5 years later. Executive chef job drops in my lap, and I just hung around until, it was just me. And
until so just you outlasted them all.
I wouldn't have ever predicted that. And so I'm super fortunate. I've had a fantastic team. Peter started a beautiful thing.
Peter Lewis.
Continues on. We nurture that, and it attracts the right kind of people. And people that love the French approach to food and dining and hospitality and love, being nice to other people.
Yeah.
And are genuine about it. And that's what you got to have to survive these days. If you're not into it, it doesn't work.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
And it's very authentic in there. It feels very French, which is what you're trying to do. I think it's very, very French for sure. So it's one of the true French restaurants in Seattle.
It's a great deal of pride for me. I mean, I was born in Jamaica and I grew up in Kentucky. And so many times up and they're like, maybe even Haiti. They're hoping for Haiti or Martinique or something. I'm like, no. But I love the French food. We travel to France. We embrace it and make it work for Seattle. And our great pleasure is when French people come over and go, this seems a little like home, and which is pretty generous
that's
for us.
That's pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
very
fantastic
cool
for us.
The fact that you've been able to work in the Pike Place Market for the last 25 years must just be soul-warming for you.
It's extraordinary. I really cannot imagine another place in the city. Mm-hmm. And for many years, the market is an extraordinary place. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about it a little bit because, when I started in 95, I was sort of aware a little bit of what was going on. But really, probably 6-7 years ago, I ended up on the board of the foundation of the Pike Place Market, and I realized all the thing that the market does, whether it's the senior center, the food bank, the low-income housing, all of that, the neighborhood clinic. The market was saved, really, by a bunch of urban planners, and they looked down the road and said, we need to make sure this is a safe and nurturing place for the community, and we have systems in place to keep everybody going.
Yeah, because over the decades, they've been faced with developers wanted to put some beautiful glass building there.
That location is a juicy piece of chicken.
Yeah,
everybody
wants
that, right? You can imagine.
Yeah.
There's a lot of momentum that would want to take that up and put a lot of stuff there. And, of course, people would be remiss, and they'd want to recreate the market to give it some soul.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we've got to protect and nurture that. Fortunately, now there's a fund that we're working on. The goal is, I think, $3.5 million, and we're at about $2.5 million to help with the safety net, which is there for market residents. It's there for market people that shop and take advantage of the services in the market that are hitting spots where, boom, the money's gone.
Yeah.
There's also the business recovery fund for small businesses who've all of a sudden run out of customers. And so many grants have been given, and we're hoping to give the rest. The food bank, the senior center, all of those things are really cranked up to protect people and help them. And I think that many of the neighborhoods neighborhoods around the city wished now probably that they had a system like that set up. Because right now we all need each other. We need to lock elbows and look after each other and get through this thing together.
Yeah, the help won't come from anywhere else but your own community. So.
No.
Well, I've written several articles about the market, and one of them, the ones that I think kind of resonates the most for me when I tell people, you know, the market has a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
It has a real heartbeat. It's an entire community in three blocks.
Right.
And it is, you either use it or lose it.
Yeah.
It's just as simple as that.
So. Yeah, it really is the soul of the city.
Absolutely.
And it's one of those things that you realize you have to nurture. It's a connecting point. It's a point of inspiration. And I think it's a manifestation of our being our best to each other, which is so critical right now. It's a mix, a real crazy variety and mix of people. People aren't siloed. You're together with everybody. Yeah. The buskers, the business owners, the tourists, everybody. So it's a sensational
place.
Well,
part not of the so
city.
Many tourists right now.
Oh, yeah. I know.
I think the attention to preserve it is showing how much of a diversified community we have.
Yes.
You know, it's very important that we understand the market is diversified, is showing different traits of the community, but it shows us as a city and as a community to be very aware, to work on conserving it, because it's a very, very important part of the city.
Absolutely. And it nurtures independent businesses.
Right.
Where else would I end up owning this iconic restaurant with the support and the protection and the nourishment of that market location?
Right. Yeah, or it could have been a McDonald's.
It could have been a McDonald's.
Exactly.
And that's the critical thing that, you know, many people don't realize, is that if you have to be an independent business to be there, you may end up with other locations like Starbucks,
but
your first one has to be in the market.
Yeah.
And that commitment is what makes it different from so many similar iconic locations around the world that are overrun with chains and other things.
Right,
and you
think,
why should I go?
Yeah.
Because I can get that online.
Right. It always baffles me when you go to Chicago from Seattle and start buying stuff at a big store, then you can't.
Yeah, you're like, why get
Seattle,
on the plane?
Let's talk about your joint for a second, though, before we run out of time.
Yeah.
So I was reading an article about you and your rad bike and your self-proclaimed delivery service. Tell us about that.
We started neighborhood delivery. I knew that it had been challenging for people to get down to the market for different reasons, traffic, all of that other kind of stuff. So we thought, let's take it to them. So I bought a bike and I installed myself as the chief, currently only bike rider. For a $50 minimum purchase, within a mile and a half, I will show up at your door with your food somewhere between 11 and 5.
Uh-huh.
No, one order doesn't take that long. Those are the hours of the delivery.
You can only do one order a day.
And so it's been great. And the people are kind of surprised when I tell them that I own the joint and I'm delivering. But it's given me a great chance to connect with guests. I'm getting great feedback, finding out so much strong and enthusiastic affection for the cafe that really just makes my heart swell. We just launched Cassoulet, which is our sort of become our huge big
every year
winter dish. We usually start it the first week in October, but we kicked it off early, so you can get that to go. And I'm starting a thing where if you order 5 portions of the Cassoulet and you want it hot, I will deliver it. I'll show up on my bike, because we've got a whole gaggle of those Le Creuset pots and whatever, you know, all of those pots. So I will warm it up, show it up at your door somewhere between 11 and 5. So
putting in a little thermal bag. And,
Oh, yeah. I got the whole thing. So plan
on
a
your
party
bike
and call me up, and I will, if you order 5 of those things and you want it hot, Daisley Gordon.
Hey,
delivery
and so
guy.
Do you just empty the pot when you get there into their own vehicle?
No. They little deposit, and then I'll either bring it back or I'll schlep and go get it.
Yeah.
You know, we're a full service crew.
Community, very community like.
Absolutely.
Small town like.
Yeah, it's the new reality. You have to go the extra mile.
Yeah.
Please tell me you wear a helmet. You don't have any hair.
Tell me you
wear a helmet.
I do. I'm very safe. I'm an old man.
I've seen picture of you on it.
Bright orange jacket, bright bright orange helmet, bright orange shoes, gloves, everything. I look like I'm going to war. My first delivery was a block and a half away, and I still rode the bike. I just had to.
You know, that rad bike company is right across the street from our warehouse in Ballard, and they are so inundated right now with orders for bicycles.
Yeah, I think everybody realized, you know, I mean, we got hills in Seattle, so the electric thing is fantastic. And when I was looking for a bike, I realized, oh, geez, these guys are right here. They supply all the bikes to the big pizza company, and so they've been great. They were great information, great support.
Well, I would encourage everyone to get online at cafecampagna.com.
Exactly.
And place an order and support Daisley's Restaurant and all the restaurants around town. If you want them here when this is all over, you got to do a little effort to keep them here while it's going on. So that's we appreciate that you came over from, three blocks away. Hopefully you rode your bike.
Absolute pleasure. Always great to see you guys.
Good. Likewise, Daisley.
I'm going to order some food, although I got to figure out a mile and a half. I got to figure that out. Up next, Daisley's going to stay with us to do Food for Thought Tasty Trivia on the Hot Stove Society Show, Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. Time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia here on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Chef, are you ready? Are you prepared?
I am ready, and we have a serious competitor today, because not only is he a restaurateur, but he's also a chef. He's got all the trick in his pocket, and he has never done this before, so I'm kind of worried. Mr. Daisley Gordon from Café Campagne.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Ooh,
how you feeling, Daisley?
I'm feeling strong. I'm fully caffeinated, ready to go.
He had his raise this morning, I guess.
You know, Terry, one of the things I've noticed, you know, when Tina left the show, I used to win sort of regularly on Tasty Trivia. Turns out, when my coworker took over producing the show, I lose every week. I can't figure it out.
It's weird. Super weird.
Super weird. Madeline Dow, you are here. You're the producer of the show now. You want to tell people the rules?
I do.
And I will tell you that this tasty trivia is brought to you by my line of Rub With Love, handcrafted versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add a flavorful kick, a whole lot of love, just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. I cooked it last night on rockfish. I did a little veggie rub on rockfish. Really good. Look for Rub With Love products in your local grocery store or butcher shop or online or at my own shop, tomdouglas.com/shop.
Awesome. And, you know, today, a lucky winner, our listener, Maria Elena Lara, is going to win a jar of salmon rub and a 12-inch boning knife from Hot Stove Knives by you as well. And we're going to throw in a Seattle Kitchen cookbook as well. So she can cook, do a little bit of salmon, carve it herself, maybe order some from Cena C.
Chicken.
Or a chicken.
Yeah.
Either way, you can use it. It's very versatile. And I would say also, the Rub With Love team is who pays me on the side to make the questions harder for you.
Oh, really?
Super interesting. So just in case you were wondering.
Yeah. Tough.
So Thank you, Carol and Dana.
It is possible to play.
And I pay the Rub With Love team. So actually, I'm paying people to make my life more difficult.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love this show.
Things never change.
I love this.
It's nice to know Madalena has a price.
It's true. All right, Thierry, you are up first. Are you ready, sir?
I am ready. Go ahead.
Okay, Marsala wine is produced on which Mediterranean island?
Sardinia.
Sicily.
Yeah, that was next to it.
Close. Which part of the cow does chuck meat come from?
The roast side of the cow.
Is that what they call it, chuck roast? I'm going to go with the leg.
Ah, the shoulder.
Shoulder.
Wow, maybe we swapped order.
No, I know.
I thought you were going out for the rowing team.
Front leg.
Okay, if you put a rotten egg in a bowl of water, will it float or sink?
Most likely you should sink.
It will float.
Well, of course.
You are 0 for 3.
That's awesome.
Okay.
Daisley, don't smile so hard.
I'm sorry.
Which Mexican food has the meaning little donkey?
Hey, you know what this is? The wheelbarrow? Right?
Wheelbarrow?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that what a donkey is?
Oh, but it's like some people call it a wheel.
It's a beast of burden, right?
Burro.
Oh, yeah.
A burro?
A burrito.
Oh, good job. I like the assistance.
I get a piece of that somewhere.
The phone, yes, a friend.
You get a half point. You get a half point. I get a half point.
Hey.
What? I'm just giving him a half point for being so nice. And you know what?
All right. Well, even we're not even in October yet, but in movies and literature, which herb is often used as a weapon by vampire hunters?
Garlic.
Correct. Good job. I'm so
is garlic
proud.
An herb?
It's not an herb.
They call it an herb. It's not an herb. That's not really an herb.
Herb.
I think we should disqualify the host.
Yeah.
Okay, you're 2 for 5 here, Thierry.
No,
Daisley, you are
half.
Up next. Oy. Are you ready?
Okay.
From which part of a pig do we get ham from?
The leg.
The hind leg.
The hind leg.
The hind leg.
You're supposed to, you should be over there shaking your leg for me.
Okay. All right. Roquefort, feta, and manchego are all cheeses made from the milk of which animal?
Sheep.
Correct. 2 for 2.
I didn't get that.
Roquefort. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
It's okay.
How many calories are there in a Burger King Whopper? 330, 630, or 930?
630.
Correct. 630.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you got that.
I love that.
That's awesome.
Okay. Although eaten locally for thousands of years, production of which seed or grain has roughly tripled in the Andes since the 1990s?
Quinoa.
That is correct.
Uh-oh. Well, I feel like we're being ambushed.
Uh-oh. But I'm definitely ambushed.
I didn't know this. Okay, this one might be tough. What is added to champagne to make a black velvet cocktail?
What's added to champagne to make a black velvet cocktail?
I never had this.
And it's not black garlic.
Is it Guinness?
Wow, it is Guinness.
Boom. Oh! Did you just pull that out?
No, I've been to the Guinness plant.
Wow.
In Dublin,
yeah. Okay, God. You are 5 for 5.
You totally worked us over that. You know, I didn't know.
I slipped a little Cassoulet to rub with love. I rubbed him with Cassoulet. I rubbed him with duck fat.
All right, Tom. You have big shoes to fill
awesome
here.
Show. All right. By the way, you're not coming back next
week.
Okay, Tom. One of the most popular condiments in the world.
Sriracha.
2,200-year-old sauce made with fermented beans, grain, brine, and fungus.
The only one that I know is made from fermented beans is hoisin, but 2,200 fermented beans. Hoisin's made with miso. I'm going to go hoisin sauce.
Soy sauce.
Soy sauce.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. What is the official state fruit?
Oh, you just are so proud of yourself.
It's like Alex Trebek. She's got the answers. Like, yeah.
Okay. It's a lot of fun. Okay, your second question. What is the official state fruit of New Hampshire?
My God.
You grew up in Delaware, isn't it? Next door-ish?
That's the Mid-Atlantic.
Oh, that's right. That's your private school education talking right there, isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly.
What was that, Chapman?
Close.
Chapman College you went to?
Close by the neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's on the East Coast.
Yeah. On the East Coast.
New Hampshire, it must be plums. Pumpkins.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Did you say fruit?
She said fruit.
Fruit. Pumpkin is a fruit.
What?
You know, the garlic herb thing.
I know.
We need to reassess the situation.
Blame the internet. I will take the blame. I will take the blame.
Wow.
Okay.
Unfortunately, that doesn't help me any.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. But popular in Northern Ireland, a farl is a type of what? F-A-R-L.
It's a type of critter that goes around low to the ground. It's a close relative of
That's
the ferret.
A ferret.
You're so good at this. It's amazing.
It's a ferret.
No, it's a bread, actually.
It's a bread.
Yeah, it's a bread.
And ferrets love bread.
What do the letters C and H stand for in C and H sugar?
Charlie and Helen.
Sends you the regals.
Nope. California and Hawaii.
Oh, yeah, see?
Wow.
Charlie and Helen live.
Oh, and four.
Yeah.
Okay, weird. Okay, here's one for you. Which drink is normally spelled with an E in the United States and Ireland, but without an E in other countries that produce it?
Irish cream.
You could actually think about it.
No, the answer is whiskey.
Whiskey.
Oh, whiskey.
Oh, that's right.
I love Irish whiskey.
Yeah, S-K-Y and E-Y.
Fortunately, I drank so much, I didn't recognize that there was no E.
Blame it on the whiskey.
Wouldn't have helped you much anyway. You are 0 for 5. We have a 3-week trend here.
Yeah, exactly.
And Daisley is our winner. Thanks for staying and playing with us. We appreciate it.
We delivered from
Maria. We really appreciate that too, Daisley. That was super fun. Super fun to get trashed. If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook at Hot Stove Society Show. You're listening to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. This show is produced adequately by Madeline Dow Pennington and Amy Richardson. Sound and production by Mark Goodenow from the Production Foundry. And our editor is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. Remember, if you miss any episode of the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you for listening and have a wonderful weekend.